Gary DePaul with Unlabeled Leadership. Welcome to episode 77, Enrique Rubio Inspires the Human Resource Profession. Here's a shout out to listeners in Illinois and just to name some of the cities for this time: Arlington Heights, Belleville, Buffalo Grove, Chicago, Downers Grove, Glen Ellen, Northbrook, Oak Park. With that, let's get started. Take a minute and imagine what your life might be like if you were just a little bit more disciplined. You just pushed yourself in something consistently. Well, Enrique, that's his life. He is a highly disciplined person, and he has the accomplishments to show it. He's a runner and an athlete. He has an electrical engineering degree and an executive master's in public administration. He also was a Fulbright scholar. On top of that, he's certified in design thinking, a scrum master, and he has his project management professional certification, which is commonly known as PMP, from the Project Management Institute, or PMI. I know Enrique I've known him for a number of years because he is the founder of an association called Hacking HR, which is this phenomenal group that is a community. It's a global learning community about HR and the disruption of traditional thinking in human resources. Oh, and on top of all that, he's a podcaster, and he puts out a lot of podcasts. So go to the show notes and check some of them out. Part 1, Misfit or Entrepreneur? If you have the entrepreneurial spirit, you do things a little bit differently. You learn to work hard, fast, and you make events happen. You cannot rely on reacting to what comes about. One of the consequences of being an entrepreneur is that you act and react and make things happen in a way that's different from how other people do those same things. It's at a different level, and that can be problematic. Enrique shares an experience where he runs across something like this type of a challenge. Here's Enrique.
There's one thing that somebody said to me once, and actually she was my boss. She said to me that I move too fast. I should not expect the world to move at the same pace that I move.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. On the one hand, I felt that as some sort of an attack, let's say, you know, at the beginning of the way I am and the pace at which I move. I've always thought about myself as a misfit, you know, and that's why working for corporate world has been interesting, and then it gets boring.
Mm.
But she said that to me. And at the same time, I realized that whether I move fast or slow, the world around me won't necessarily move at that same pace, whether it is fast or slow. The challenge for me was, how can I continue to be who I am, a misfit, somebody who is curious, somebody who is rebellious, you know, because I don't blindly follow authority or dogmas. I'm more practical, and I believe when people are to be trusted, I trust in them, but I don't just blindly say I'm going to trust in this person because they have the title of the boss or the leader and whatnot. So being that way, to me, the big question became, how can I continue being like this? You know, not necessarily changing and learning whenever I needed to, but how can I continue being this misfit, this rebellious person, and, you know, being curious and creative and moving fast while also accepting that even if I wanted to move at certain speed, those around me don't have to follow that speed. That is a realization that in some ways has helped me, even though the context of that comment that my boss made was a completely different comment. You know, she was trying to, you know, sort of like turn down my creativity at work, which sucked. But at the same time, what it created in me was, sometimes things just don't move at the pace I wanted to move. And I got to learn how to be patient, accept that the world is different. So sometimes it's actually going in the opposite direction from where I wanted to go. That's okay. That's the way life is. That was recent, by the way. You know, it's maybe within the past 5 years. That comment really elicited sort of a reflection.
You do realize that the word misfit is the same as entrepreneur.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, When you ask people why they want to be an entrepreneur and they want to work for themselves, generally, yes, they say, I want to solve a problem or I found this opportunity. If you want to solve a problem and if you found an opportunity, why don't you do that from your work? I mean, you don't have to be an entrepreneur to be able to do that.
Yeah.
But it all boils down to like people saying, I won't be able to do it at my own pace, with my own style, with my own thinking, if I have to report this to somebody else who thinks differently. If I am an entrepreneur who is trying to solve a problem or explore an opportunity and create some either revenue or impact out of this opportunity, I want to be able to do it in the way I wanted to do it. So if I fail, well, I'm going to embrace it. If I succeed, I'm going to embrace it, but I'm doing it in a way that makes sense for who I am. And that sometimes, that expression of doing something in the way you wanted to do it, sometimes is in contradiction with the workplace in which you're working, because they want to do things in the way they want to do them. And there's misalignment in there.
Yes, I agree with that. There are some behaviors I think you have that help you work as hard as you do. This is speculation on my part. And based on seeing some LinkedIn posts, you get up early in the morning, you work out daily, and you're definitely a go-getter. You remind me of a good friend of mine who I would call brother, is someone who was in the military who does that. He gets up early, he works out, he runs, and he is so different from other people. When he works for a company, he accomplishes so much more. He'll get something done and maybe a third of the time. It's just his dedication and commitment to what he does, but it's also some of the disciplines. I'm speculating that you have a foundation of disciplines that is sort of like a guiding principle for you.
Yes, very much so. I am very disciplined. I don't want to say about everything, even though I'm an athlete and I get my training. I'm a vegan, so I'm very, mindful about, what I eat. You know, sometimes I try to eat less chocolate and I can't.
Understood.
So, but in general, for most things, I am very disciplined in the way I approach things. I hadn't found sort of an explanation for this. And very recently, probably within the past 2 or 3 months, I posted something and somebody responded saying this: discipline is more important than motivation. Wow. That is so true.
Yeah.
The way I have defined this, at least in the world of running, I'm a runner. When people would ask me, Enrique, do you always want to run? And the answer is no. Sometimes I don't feel like running, but I still do it. Because if I don't do it, then I'm not getting my training in. Then I'm not in the shape I need to be for my races and whatnot. So I may not be motivated to run, but the discipline to make it happen is so much more powerful than the motivation that I may have that day. Motivation fades away. It could be a roller coaster. And the underlying principle of making things happen will be that discipline. Same thing for entrepreneurs. One day you may see like, wow, look at all the awesomeness that I'm creating for my organization, for my business. And some other day you are like, man, nothing is happening. Like it's all moving so slow. You may feel different levels of motivation in those two sort of separate occasions, but the discipline to continue the journey is what will drive you forward. So yes, I think discipline in my life has been, at least in my adult life, and particularly over the past, maybe 10 plus years, has been an important driver of what I do.
I've learned from you just now, and I'm thinking of some of the tasks that I was doing that I ended up stopped doing because of the taking on new work like this podcast. And I realized that if I had been disciplined, and even if I was feeling too busy, I still could be doing what I was doing before. You've just inspired me.
Life is quite something. I mean, we go through a roller coaster of ups and downs. The two things that I think would help us move forward are, number one, that long-term vision. Stephen Covey called it, beginning with the end in mind, that holistic vision of what we want in life. And sometimes that's very blurry, sometimes invisible, especially at the beginning of our lives and, as we are younger. And maybe that blurry vision, it starts to like sharpen as we learn and talk with people and gain experience. So that's one thing. And the other thing is that even if you had that vision of what you want to become and do in life, you still have to have the discipline to get there.
Mm.
And because it's not a straightforward journey, as in, it's always going to be, a journey of all up. There's going to be downs and significant downs. The discipline and the vision will help you get through them and continue the journey. One thing that is important for me to say is I'm not preaching to the choir here. I'm not saying this as in I'm the master of these things. No, I have to remind myself of this every day. I have to be very intentional about it, because the temptation of not doing what I need to do to bring that vision to life is high. Every system in life always tries to find the path of least resistance.
Yes, yes.
That path of least resistance sometimes is a path that is taking us in the opposite direction from the vision that we want in life. So we got to be very intentional about our discipline. And that means that we got to be very intentional about knowing that the journey ahead will have more resistance than the path of, you know, least resistance. And we got to be able to continue the journey through the ups and downs. And I got to remind myself every day of this, every day.
Part two, the potential of human resources. In my books, I write about leadership from the perspective of an individual leading. What Enrique does is he takes it to the next level and talks about human resources, or HR, as leading, as the opportunity to be the trailblazer for an organization. Here's Enrique talking more about human resources as having that potential.
I think that sometimes people, for whatever reasons, they lose the ability to see the light in themselves. Let me explain what that means. In the case of HR, setting up a more specific context, I don't say this just because, you know, it's the right thing to say, or because I'm saying it just for political correctness purposes, but I say it because I believe in it. I believe that human resources has the power and the potential to become a trailblazer that guides people forward by building a more humanistic society. I believe in that power. I believe in that potential. I don't think we still have what is needed to do that effectively, but I believe in that. The context here is that me believing that doesn't mean that everybody believes that this is true. So I first have to inspire people. As a leader in this space of HR, I first have to inspire people in this HR space to believe that they actually have this power. From there, I have to help them grow and thrive and flourish to be able to bring this vision of HR being a trailblazer that creates a more humanistic workplace, to bring that vision to reality. That to me is an example of some level of leadership that begins from a place of working with a group of people that may not see that in themselves. I see it. I don't know why. And people ask me this all the time, like, why do you think that, Enrique? Like, I mean, why do you even think that HR has this potential? And, you know, sometimes there are things that you can't explain. And I may not be able to explain this too well yet of why I think that HR professionals have this potential capacity. As a leader, as I said before, I'm trying to instill and inspire HR professionals and HR leaders to believe that they can actually make a difference by creating a better workplace and creating a better world. And from there, giving them the tools to grow and progress and flourish in this sense. That perhaps is one example that pertains to my own life and the work that I do and the vision that I want to bring to reality.
I think you're sort of introducing HR 3.0. And what I mean by that is HR 1.0, the purpose of HR, I haven't read this, but my interpretation is to protect the company.
Yeah.
So it's not there to help the employees, it's to protect the company from unions and what certain employees might do if they rebel or they get hostile or whatever. And then it seems that HR kind of became more of a transitional type of a role where it did involve protecting employees and looking out for them. But it seems that what your vision is what I would call HR 3.0. I'm just sort of making that up. And that's where they do protect the company, they do protect employees, but they have their position in such a way in their organization to change the culture, to influence the culture, then influence the executives, those in charge, and influence the employees.
Yes, yes. There was a, I don't remember who put this out. You know, it was a few years ago. There was a commercial where there was like a mom or a dad telling a kid, you know, maybe 5, 6 years old, the kid wanted to do something. And the parent would say, don't do this, don't do that. And the something that I'm talking about is like swimming in a swimming pool or going out for a run or something like that. Then the commercial would show the same kid now having become Michael Phelps or Usain Bolt or something like that. The bottom line of the commercial was, don't destroy these dreams, just promote them instead, right? I mean, if you have a kid that he or she loves swimming, don't tell him no. I mean, just promote that. Why am I saying that? It's for this reason. For a long, long, long time, HR was told your work is to protect the company, to mitigate risk, to hire, fire, pay, run transactions, run administrations. And that has been going on for years, year after year after year. Just today, when we are recording this podcast, I got an email from a large HR association telling people, be the best in compliance and the best HR by being the best in compliance. I'm like, for how long are you going to tell people this freaking story that we know doesn't work anymore? If you keep telling HR, your work is compliance, your work is administration, after such a long time, you end up believing that that's all you have to do. So we are killing the dream of HR becoming that great swimmer or that great runner or that great athlete or that great leader that we know it's possible, but for a long time, we've sort of killed the dream by telling HR that it's work, it's something else. To me, changing that tune, inspiring HR to do something that it wasn't trained to do, that takes a lot of energy. It is like, for those people that are listening, I know that very often people sort of promise to themselves, you know, I want to get fitter. I want to get more in better shape. And if you haven't worked out in a long time, the first time you go out for a run or you go to the gym or you go out for a walk, probably the next day your muscles are going to be hurting and they're going to be hurting because you haven't, your muscles are weak. You know, you haven't done that in a long time. The same thing is happening with the chart right now. I believe that our muscle for creativity, for risk-taking, for curiosity, for innovation, for empathy, for human-centered design, that muscle is either weak or was never trained. And now we're telling HR, you got to train it. That means that we got to be very disciplined about training it. We got to withstand the pain that comes from the very beginning of the transition between not having used those muscles and not having to use them. And that's not easy, you know, because again, as I mentioned before, the path of least resistance is doing exactly what we do today and just leaving it that way. But I don't think that path works anymore for HR nor for anybody else. So it's quite a process here. It's quite a process to inspire HR to believe that once they train that muscle, they will be in such an amazing place, much better than anything we've ever seen in the past.
I think what's amazing and why your mission to create the best HR ever with Hacking HR is so crucial. There's a lot of new people coming into the HR world and they could easily do the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
If they connect with a community that really looks at showing you how you can develop your muscle to be able to make a difference in an organization, that would have such a huge impact for that individual just starting out. And so they won't end up choosing the path of least resistance.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the work that I am trying to do. And again, it's not easy. Not just work or HR, but in the world of life. If you tell somebody, oh, you got to go to the gym, you got to go and get around, you got to eat healthier, people are like, ah, oh, yeah, I'll do it later or maybe not, blah, blah, blah. Unless they see either a crisis or a significant sense of urgency of doing that. Like, for example, a doctor telling you, hey, man or woman, you got to eat better. You got to, get some workout in because, well, you know, your heart is going through this, your body's going through that. And then there is a sense of urgency when you hear that. And I feel that even though we have experienced recently periods of urgency for HR to change, the pain is not obvious yet. If the pain is not obvious yet for us to be forced to change, then there is going to be less of an incentive to actually change. But the reality is this. As we transition into a new world of life and work, what quote unquote people call the future of work, which is happening right now, or is in the making right now, we are getting farther and farther behind. When the moment is needed for us to deliver some different kind of value, the muscles will be so weakened or the crisis will be so sharp that we won't be able to do what we need to do in order to create that human workplace or help our organizations remain sustainable and succeeding or even help our people. And the question is, what's going to happen then? What is a business leader going to say, wait a second, HR, you didn't get ready for this moment. What do I do now? I probably don't think I'll need you anymore. and I don't want to keep you around because what you do and what you've done for a long time is not what helps me now. I'm hoping that HR sees this sense of urgency. Today, we're witnessing a compelling case for us to change, even when there's no significant pain obliging us to change. If we're able to take advantage and, you know, seize the opportunity to change, to become better, I think we are going to be much better prepared for when the actual time comes for us to have that new value and not just doing the old things.
You need to start working out.
Because you don't want to wait until you have a heart attack. You don't want to wait until your body is depleted from its capacity to change. Just to give you a very personal story, my dad was an alcoholic. There was nothing that you could tell my dad for him to stop drinking. One day he wasn't feeling well. We went to the doctor. The doctor told him, man, your liver is almost destroyed. And if you had come here a couple of months later with the same pattern of drinking, you wouldn't have made it. The doctor told him, you got to stop drinking today, not tomorrow, not in 1 hour from now. Right now, you got to stop drinking because otherwise you won't make it. My dad was so scared of the possibility of dying from cirrhosis, which is a horrible illness, that he stopped drinking. He stopped drinking and he got so much better. And what I'm trying to do with HR is don't wait until your liver is destroyed for you to stop doing the same things you've done for a long period of time. Get in shape, get the muscle trained, get the workout in so that you can be ready for all the future challenges and opportunities too.
If you haven't been exercising your HR muscle, do so now. It's not too late. You can start at any time. There's a responsibility for those in higher level positions of the organization to ensure that new people coming in are doing that. They're learning how to exercise their muscles. So that means they need education, they need development, they need opportunities to see how to do their role differently than the transactional stuff that they're assigned to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think that the more we wait, it's not a linear sort of equation here. It's not that if you wait one day to get ready, then in one day you're going to be able to get ready. Because what happens is the more we wait, the changes happen at an exponential rate. So that means that if you wait a day to get ready for something, then you are already behind by 10 days, not just by one day. And what that means is that catching up with the things that are happening around us, not even to be ahead of the curve, but to even be aware of the freaking curve, the more we wait for that, the farther behind we are. We don't have time to lose here. That's kind of bottom line of one of the things that I'm saying. Because the more time we lose, the farther and farther, exponentially farther behind we get. And that's why when I hear people and organizations trying to present these models of HR that continue to make HR think that only by getting better at transaction administration, compliance, policy, that only by getting better at that, they will be able to add value in the future. I think like, wow, what are these people doing? They are harming HR so badly because they are telling HR that getting better at what we do today is going to be enough. And that is not true. That is just simply not true. I am hoping that HR gets inspired to go to the quote unquote gym of mindset transformation. And we start getting the workout in. We work our creativity, empathy, leadership, curiosity, innovation muscles, because we got to get ready. You know, we got to get ready for the races ahead of us.
Part 3, Beyond Open-Mindedness. As the founder of Hacking HR, Enrique challenges HR professionals to think differently about what they do and how they do it. Enrique advises us on how we could start to think a little bit differently than we currently do. Again, here's Enrique.
I have this theory about two or three things that I think everybody, more particularly leaders, will need to do going forward. And this is what I call them. Number one, I talk about a concept that I have coined, being radically open-minded. You know, when somebody's just open-minded, what happens is that if you have an idea and somebody else has an idea and that person presents that idea to you, even if it's different, but it's still aligned with your system of beliefs and assumptions and preconceptions about the world, then it's easier for you to say, well, maybe your idea is better than mine, but your idea still validates what I think. Therefore, let's go with your idea because it doesn't force me to change too much. Now, being radically open-minded is completely different. What that means is that if somebody challenge your very system of beliefs and assumptions about the world, when you are radically open-minded, you're able to say, I gotta let go of my previous assumptions and preconceptions about how things are and embrace these new things. And this has happened in several locations in history. You know, humanity used to think that the earth was the center of the universe, telling people, well, it's not even the sun. We're not the center of the universe. That made scientists and people change their beliefs and assumptions about the world and the universe. The Newtonian versus quantum physics, that was a dramatic change in beliefs. Being radically open-minded is having the capacity to say, when I'm challenged with facts and ideas that contradict my system of beliefs, and those ideas and facts are so powerful that they make me sort of reflect and let go of all things and embrace the new, that is critical for leaders going forward. The second thing is believing the unbelievable. And what I mean by that is that sometimes we are confronted with those things that challenge what we believe and we don't believe them. We don't believe that they are going to be true. I remember, you know, like when Reed Hastings tried to sell Netflix to Blockbuster, the guys in Blockbuster said, $50 million? Are you freaking crazy? Get out of here. This business of people renting movies in a store like ours, that's never going to change. We're always going to be in business and we're always going to be the best. What happened today? There's only one Blockbuster store left, and just like a symbol of what that used to be. These leaders never believed that their business was going to be disrupted in such a dramatic way by a company like Netflix. And it all happened too quickly. And then the third thing is, besides being radically open-minded, believing the unbelievable, the third thing is seeing the invisible. I think one very powerful thing for leaders of the future in HR or business is seeing challenges and opportunities ahead of everybody else. What that means is that you will have to rely on your teams, on more collaboration to be able to see things, connect dots that nobody else is seeing. Recently, Amazon bought MGM. Not too many people forecasted that that was ever going to happen, the same way that they never saw Amazon buying Whole Foods in 2017 and getting into the grocery sort of food kind of industry. A handful of people were predicting that, you know, Amazon is going to get into all these spaces. What does that mean for our industry? So see the invisible, connect the dots, see the patterns, and then translate that into what that means to your organization, to your business, to your industry, and to yourself individually. So those three things are my three long-term recommendations for leaders.
If you're working in a company, regardless of what department it is, if all you do is your job and try to learn from within the company, you're going to fall short. In fact,
oh my God, yeah.
Doesn't matter if you're an accountant, if you're an auditor, being aware of what's going on in the broader spectrum and the broader field of that you're in, and with what your company is doing, their competition, you may end up being aware of something that no one else sees, and you have an opportunity to lead and help your organization.
I think we could spend 10 hours just talking about this very specific thing that you just mentioned. People ask me all the time, Enrique, what do you think would be the first thing that you would do for HR to continue to be relevant going forward? And I mentioned a bunch of things throughout this conversation, but I would say one thing: step out of your HR cocoon. I call it that way, by the way. Step out of your HR cocoon and start learning things that are outside of traditional HR core functionality or thinking. Learn about those things and connect the dots with what you actually do and your industry and your company. Because just doing what you do and even getting better at that, that still keeps you in your silo. And siloed of approach to work, that doesn't work anymore. And I give you one example. When I think about climate change and the challenges, but also the opportunities of creating a different, more environmentally sustainable world can create for all of us going forward, I immediately think about HR. This is why climate change will disrupt entire industries. It will practically transform entire cities and countries and coastal regions and whatnot. And we don't see the sense of urgency today, but in the next 5, 10, maybe, 15, 20, 30 years, who knows, the challenges that climate change will create for us are so powerful that we need to start getting ready for that today. But climate change, or the understanding of the implications of climate change, may not have anything to do with HR, but they do. They are outside of traditional HR thinking. But if we get out there and we see what those opportunities and challenges are, and then we come back to our work in HR, we may be able to connect some dots that address those challenges, but also take advantage of the opportunities in the space. That's one example that people think sometimes, like climate change and HR, they don't match at all, but they do. Maybe some people don't see it that way right now, but I'm hoping that we don't have to wait until the emergency or the crisis happens for us to say, oh yes, they were related in some way, but that we start getting the muscles ready for us to be ready for that when we have to actually do something about it.
My thanks to Enrique Rubio. If you'd like to learn more about Enrique, go to the show notes. And if you have a question or comment, go to unlabelleadership.com, click the message icon, and you can leave a voicemail message up to 1 minute. I'd like to thank those who contribute to the show. Your contributions make a big difference because this is a completely voluntary service. And lastly, I'd like to thank you for listening. Until next time, lead on.